You're listening to the iHeartRadio Talk Network, and this is the Evan Solomon Show.
Happy Wednesday, Canada. How you doing today? On a beauty day, summer's coming in. It's not here yet, but it certainly is hinting it across this beautiful country of ours. We're still in it. We're still in the COVID crisis. We are going to get into like the seventh inning stretch where we're just bored stiff, but we can't get there yet. And I'll tell you why. It's just, there's too much agony. This we're calling this a COVID crisis. In the end, this will be the second Great Depression. That's what it will be. Now, one of the reasons it's not is that our governments learned from some of the mistakes of the Great Depression of the 30s. What was one of the great mistakes there? And it actually is relevant to this day. One of the great mistakes that governments made in the Great Depression in the early days after the 1929 crash in the dirty early 30s was they thought deflation was the answer. And this is relevant today because we haven't had deflation since 2009. We had negative inflation. People are like, what's that? Is that good? Is that bad? I don't know. Well, it's interesting because it's two sides. Most of us fear inflation, right? Runaway inflation prices. Everything gets so damn expensive and you can't afford your house and the interest rates go up to try to stop inflation. And then you can't pay your mortgage and then you're out of a house. And you know, most of us hasn't really experienced deflation, which is negative inflation. And negative inflation just means, I'll give you an example. If you could buy 10 apples for a dollar, deflation means you can buy 10 apples for 90 cents or 95 cents. In other words, you can buy more goods and services for less money. So you might think, hey, that's pretty good. The consumer purchasing power goes up. And that's why during the early part of the Depression, governments thought, well, this is not bad. I mean, after all, people have less money, but less money buys them more stuff, so deflation is good. That was fundamentally wrong. What happened was deflation has a deflationary knock-on effect, a domino effect, a spiral effect. And means when there's no demand, no one's got any, you know, we've got high unemployment, you can't pay your rent, you can't pay your mortgage, you don't have a job, you're on the CERB, 7.5 million people are taking the emergency. This is where we are right now. You have no money. So then when you have no money, there's no demand. When there's no demand, the price falls. The producers then start getting a glut, the glut on the oil market. And so the price falls because there's too much supply. The demand decreases because no one's buying and you get into a deflationary cycle. So even though in the short term you're buying more with less, there's no jobs. And the companies say, look, we got to lay more people off. There's no demand. We got to stop production. And the economy seizes up. And then no one's going to lend, and then the money markets freeze up, and then you go into a total stagflation, and it's a disaster. And that was the Great Depression. So what countries have done since is they had their central bank, and you probably heard these words like quantitative easing. What does all that stuff mean? It just means the government's trying to make sure there's money in the markets to flow so governments can keep investing. That's what today is all about. All this stuff, and this goes right back to the Great Depression. We are to avoid another Great Depression. This government, the U.S. government, the European governments, every government around the world is saying we cannot let deflation happen because that will lock us into a negative cycle, even though you can buy more gas for less money today. And that's what negative inflation. But today, you've got Justin Trudeau saying we're going to lend money through something called the LEAF program. It's not a bailout to big companies, companies that have over $300 million in revenue annually. These are big companies, often public companies. The minimum loan we'll give you is $60 million. We can go way up from $60 million. You got to have a big number of people who are employed in Canada. This is to save jobs, and so companies just don't go broke. Now, who's going to apply for this is a big question. But these are not bailouts. Remember in 2009 when governments bailed out the banks, too big to fail? Then all these banks got bailed out with taxpayer money. And then what did they do? They started to give their CEOs and their senior executive team big bonuses. And people just thought that was highway robbery, robber barons. And this is what the problem is. Companies like to privatize profit. Think about that. When they make money, it's ours. We'll pay ourselves. And socialize debt. oh, we're losing money, taxpayers bail us out. They privatize profit and they socialize debt. And that sucks, because when they say socialize debt and losses, that means we're losing so much money, please bail us out in order to save our jobs. So then everyone says, oh my God, we need the jobs. We bail out the big companies, and then the exec makes $10 million and off we go again. And the merry-go-round of dysfunction continues. We've got to get off the train where they privatize profit and socialize loss. It's a loser's thing for us. We're suckers for that. That's why today, what the questions I want to ask of Bill Morneau and Justin Trudeau are, all right, I do not mind. This is a loan. That's better than a bailout. Check. That checks my box. Two, it's interest-bearing. They got to pay 5% on it. I like that. Two, if they screw up and they don't pay us back, we get to own parts of the company through something called warrants. Warrants are like a share option that you can buy at a set price if they screw up. So it looks like there are some hedges here, but I want more. And I've said this on this program for a long time. I want, one, don't give money to companies that use tax havens. I've said that for months. They say that they were not going to do that. I want to see them follow through on that. I don't buy trust but verify. Verify. Two, if the company has done stock buybacks like Air Canada has done for 5 years, what's that? That means they have so much liquidity, so much money, that they're literally buying up their own stocks on the public markets. And why are they doing that? To limit the number of stocks out there and drive up their share price. That makes their quarterly stuff look great. And guess what? They give themselves bonuses. I hate that. If they want to do stock buybacks, they've got the money for that. I don't think they should be able to qualify for a while, because they clearly have a lot of money. Two. Now three. I think in the time that they are borrowing from the taxpayer over the $60 million, they should not be able to pay the same amount of executive bonuses. I don't want to see someone saying his base salary or her base salary is $10 million, and then they cashed out their stock options for $52. I don't want to see that. Do you? So we need to make sure we're saving jobs. I have no problem with that. I'm not against big business. I like it. They're big employers. They do an enormous amount of social good. But let's make sure we're off the privatizing profit, socializing loss train. So that was what happened today. So there's big, it's business, and there's going to be rent relief for small businesses. But we've got to make sure that while we're protecting all our business and our employers in this, we're really protecting who? The rest of the country. So we're not just played for suckers. Now, we're going to talk about that a little later. Justin Trudeau said that there's going to be a big announcement on masks coming up, that Dr. Theresa Tam. So we're going to monitor that. Remember, the government has flip-flopped on two fundamental things on this in this crisis. They flip-flopped on borders, closing the borders. I was told by Patty Hyde, the minister, closing borders isn't going to help. Then they shut the borders. They were wrong. Masks aren't going to help. Wrong. Only N95 masks help. Wrong. Now all masks help. So they're going to flip-flop. Now, you can say they've learned, but they got it wrong. Other countries got it right. By the way, I think Parliament should be meeting. All they have to do is wear masks. They don't need all this virtual stuff. But when we come back, is their policy on China soft diplomacy or suck-up diplomacy? I question Bill Blair, the Minister of Public Safety, on that next. Stay with us.
Sorting through the changes, here's Evan Solomon.
Welcome back. Okay, so Dr. Theresa Tam, Canada's Chief Public Health Officer, has just given us an update on a mask. I would call this a spun flip-flop. First, we were told not to do it. Now we're told to do it, but now it's voluntary. Here's what she said. You can make of it what you want.
For the spring and summer months, strict adherence to the public health basics of physical distancing, hand washing, and cough etiquette must continue as the bare minimum. In addition, where COVID-19 activity is occurring, use of non-medical masks or face coverings is recommended as an added layer of protection when physical distancing is difficult to maintain. And staying home when sick is a must.
Okay, so here's the thing. You can say they've evolved as they've learned, or they just got it wrong. They did get it wrong. whether they willfully got it wrong. We were told that masks really don't make a difference unless they're N95, and those were for frontline workers. But now we're told actually they do if you can't socially distance. And now all over the world, masks are becoming the norm. It was the same. Closing the border didn't matter. Now we close the borders. So let's be clear. Canada got it wrong. And why did they get it wrong? They got it wrong because they followed the advice of the WHO, which also got it wrong for a long time. And why did the WHO got it wrong? Were they listening to China, who not just got it wrong, willfully suppressed information about this, disappeared doctors, et cetera, et cetera? That does not alleviate the culpability from Canada, the United States, and Europe for not taking the same kind of action that other countries like New Zealand did. They could have taken their own action. We had the information. We also screwed up. But I spoke to Bill Blair, the Minister of Public Safety, and I asked him, Donald Trump is now pulling the funding from the WHO. He's threatening to do that unless they make changes in 30 days. He'll pull right out of it, the World Health Organization. China, which usually only gives $40 million, is now prepared to give $2 billion and clearly an attempt to up its influence. This is a geopolitical game. Does the Canadian government agree that the WHO needs, quote, to use Trump's term, substantive improvements?
Well, I think the Prime Minister made it very clear, Evan, that first of all, we do believe in a multilateral approach, and bodies like the WHO is an opportunity for us to learn from the experience of others and to share the scientific findings as this illness has progressed across the world. But at the same time, the Prime Minister has also strongly indicated that we know that a thorough review has to take place. There are lessons to be learned from what has gone well and what has gone less than well in this experience. And so that review is important, but we also still believe that it's very important to work globally with international partners from around the world so that we can learn from their experience and make sure that we bring those lessons back to Canada and do what is necessary to keep Canadians safe.
Is it a mistake for the U.S. to pull its funding from the WHO?
You know, that's a political discussion that's going on between the United States and others. But I can only speak really from Canada's perspective. And from Canada's perspective, we think there is value in participation in those multilateral forums where we can learn from the experience of others and so that the entire scientific community can bring the learning from around the globe and to provide us with the best advice. We know that mistakes get made.
I understand that. But I think the question is, and one of your fellow ministers, Karina Gould, said on another network that it's not the WHO's place to criticize China. But let me just ask you a straight question. Did the WHO rely too heavily on information from China that had the knock-on consequence of other countries following the WHO advice like Canada to act too slowly? Was the WHO too reliant and trustful of bad information coming from China?
And as we have said, Evan, I think it's very important that there be a thorough review of all of the things that we experience working with the WHO and the information that we receive from them to determine if you know, I think that review is important to determine if mistakes have been made or if things could have been done better. And that's why the review is important. And we are absolutely committed to that because we do believe that there are lessons to be learned from this. You know, we know more about this illness today than we did 3 months ago or even 2 or 1 month ago. And so we want to examine very closely and review how that information was collected and shared globally and ways that we can do it better.
We actually have some information. Taiwan, South Korea, New Zealand, they all actually took a different step. They did not follow the WHO like Canada. They've had much better results, to be candid. I don't want to be a COVID morning quarterback on this, but I just want a straight answer because a lot of critics have said it's not soft diplomacy that your government is practicing with China. It's suck-up diplomacy. We've got two Canadians in prison, the two Michaels there. We have barely said anything critical about China. Does your government trust that? Was China transparent in the early days of Corona? Does your government believe that? Or do you believe that China, who silenced some of the whistleblowers, were not upfront and transparent enough about the information about COVID-19?
Yeah, let me be very clear, Evan. The two Michaels in China are unlawfully detained, and we want them returned as soon as possible. And we've never wavered on that commitment, and we still work towards that goal. And at the same time, our commitment to those multilateral global institutions like the WHO is the way in which we share information with places like Taiwan and Singapore and South Korea in those multilateral forums. And we see great value in that. And at the same time, we believe that there are lessons to be learned from our collective experience in dealing with the WHO and how information was collected and shared around the world on
China.
This.
But, sir, so Mr. Blair, you and I have a We know each other well. Was China transparent? Were they transparent, or did they lie about the information and cover it up?
And I think what needs to be determined in that review is whether or not the information was shared appropriately, and whether or not decisions were influenced pro or con with respect to that information. I think it's important, I believe, in actually getting the evidence and getting the information. And that's why we support, the Prime Minister is very clear, we support that thorough review. We think there are lessons to be learned there, and those lessons can help save Canadian lives. That's why we're committed to the review. We're not exonerating, nor are we pointing a finger at this point. We are supporting a review to determine the facts.
Minister Blair, let me ask you another question about China. If Canada is so committed to multilateral institutions, China's now gone from about $40 million to the WHO. Now they say they want to provide $2 billion. It's no coincidence they're saying that as Donald Trump is pulling back funding. This is clearly an effort at global influence. Is Canada concerned that China is trying to buy influence on the WHO and use what happened in COVID as essentially a propaganda war by using $2 billion at the WHO to increase its global influence?
Yeah, and I think evidence, it's very clear. I've already said Canada is very committed to those multilateral forums, but when we also believe that it is inappropriate for it to be unduly influenced by any particular party or interest, and that to be truly multilateral, they have to be inclusive and they have to be based on the science and the evidence. And that's what we're committed to.
Is $2 billion from China undue influence?
Well, I think that's to be determined. But we are concerned that an organization which is truly global and multilateral in its makeup and its intent might be overly influenced by any particular party or interest. And we want to make sure that such an organization supports all of its members through the science and through its expert advice.
And two last questions on this. Will Canada then, if the U.S. is dropped or threatening to drop and drops their support, and China's trying to, exponentially increase its support, will Canada increase its own contributions to the WHO to muscle up?
Canada will act in Canadians' interests at all times. And so we will constantly evaluate our participation and our support for those multilateral institutions, and we will act in Canada's interests. That's what we're responsible for, and that's what we intend to do.
Taiwan was excluded from WHO meetings this week. Canada has advocated for the country's inclusion. Will Canada continue to push for Taiwan's participation in WHO proceedings despite China's resistance?
Yeah, we believe that the Taiwanese experience and Taiwanese government has a great deal to contribute to those discussions. You know, their experience with COVID is something that I think we all wish to learn from and have full information on. And so we very much will promote the participation of everyone who has something to contribute to that global knowledge of the best way to fight this illness.
That is the conversation with Bill Blair. So did you get that? We're going to fight for Canada's interests. I guess we're going to do some kind of post-mortem on all this. But we have got to take a tougher line on China. Let's just say it. I don't know what we're so reticent about. I know China's already bit back at Australia for calling for an independent inquiry. We got to have that. Not just because it's a distraction of our own failings, because it's real. All right, when we come back, the great debate. Is bailing out the big companies the right thing to do? Wait till you hear this debate next.
Making sense of the latest news. You're listening to The Evan Solomon Show.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. So, in the time that you blinked, now Dr. Theresa Tam says, yeah, wearing masks is pretty good. It's really helpful. We kind of knew that. We said it wasn't. Now it is. Is it mandatory? No, it's still voluntary, but it really, really reduces the spread. So make it mandatory. I just don't understand why we're tiptoe so much. If masks reduce the spread, make it mandatory. I mean, every day there's economic and social ruin when we're not doing anything. If you're going to go to phase one and masks help, do it. You know? It just seems normal. Hey, if I'm coaching a hockey team and I said, you know what? The thing is, if we use this this composite stick, you're going to get a harder shot than the wood stick. Well, maybe you can. You don't have to use it. I'm like, kids, you're using it. If I could make you use it, you are. Now, do we have enough masks to go around? I don't know. Probably not yet. But that's been interesting. But the real issue today is the debate about the economy. So today, as I said, there was not a bailout, but there's a loan plan for big businesses. If you're a business that employs a large number of Canadians, you have minimum annual revenues of $300 million, you can apply for a minimum $60 million loan, but there are strings attached. It's got an interest rate of 5%. It's got to be repayable in 5 years. You've got to comply to certain things like even a climate disclosure plan on carbon emissions. And the government can buy warrants or take ownership of companies, part ownership, if they don't pay. There's that. The rent relief that they've negotiated with provinces, that's coming. The government will cover up to 50% of the rent and then the landlord 25%. And then there's the number of CERB claimants. And this is something that the National Post covered. CERB claimants top the number of jobless by a million. So there's a million more people claiming the Canadian Emergency Response Benefit, $2,000 a month, than there are people who are out of work. So what does all that mean? Are these supports working? To debate that, Ian Lee, associate professor at the Carleton University Sprott School of Business, joins us to debate his old debating partner or rival or opponent or frenemy or friend, Jim Stanford, economist and the director of the Center for Future Work. Ian and Jim, hope you and your families are well. Jim said it on Twitter, let's get ready to rumble. Are you guys ready to rumble?
Absolutely.
We're ready, Evan. Nice to talk to you again, Ian.
All right, so let me start with Stanford and then we go to Lee. You have the opening minute. Is the government right to get to, and we'll start with the LEAF program today, is the government right to extend these $60 million plus loans to big companies? Is that the right way to do things?
Oh, absolutely. As one part of the broader rescue package that the government's been bringing in, and they've been very flexible, as you say, you blink, you can miss a brand new program. And big businesses are very important in our economy. They're very important employers, very important to our investment and export performance. So we absolutely have to have something to help larger businesses that are in trouble. We rolled out small business supports early on, and this is an important part of the overall package.
All right. So there's a point for that. What do you say, Ian? You like this program?
Yes, but with a lot of caveats. Conditions, I think, is the way Morneau put it. I agree with Jim. It's necessary. They're a large employer. I think it's 20% of jobs are accounted for by the large corporate sector. We don't want them failing because we don't want them throwing those people out of work. I'm skeptical that it's only loans. You know, the Prime Minister kept saying this is not a bailout. But it didn't. We did it in 2009 with GM and Chrysler. But my largest issue, and I'll get it out quickly, is they've loaded it up with a whole bunch of conditions. And if the objective of this program, which the finance minister said it was to get the money out as quickly as possible for companies that are in trouble, then loading it up with all these conditions is going to slow down the process because, first off, companies must produce a whole bunch of paperwork and documentation to show that they're meeting the conditions, whether it's an environmental plan that's, quote, adequate to the government or that their pay is not excessive. Well, you got to demonstrate that with data. And then somebody in the government of Canada, the public servants I'm talking, have to, just like I did once upon a time a long time ago as a loan officer in the Bank of Montreal, someone's got to evaluate the application. It's an application. It's not a grant. It's not a raise your hand, you get the money. You've got to apply for it, and someone has to determine if you, in fact, meet all of those conditions mm-hmm. that they imposed. This is going to slow it down very dramatically. We took 2 weeks on average to process one small business loan when I was in the bank. These are big businesses, much more complex. I can't see them getting out the money out the door in 2 or 3 days, as Mr. Morneau said today.
Well, that's interesting, Jim. Let me flip it back to you, because the Trudeau government's been criticized for trying to get things like the CERB out the door quickly. And then Andrew Scheer said, wait a second, there could be mass fraud here, hundreds of thousands of people, and you're not checking it until the back end. So is it more important to have speed, or is it more important to really review the applications? How do you balance that under the government getting that right, Jim?
Well, first off, Evan, it's kind of funny that there's a bit of a double standard here. You know, the Conservatives are railing on about supposedly people, individual unemployed workers collecting CERB when they're not entitled to it, or applying on behalf of their horse to collect it, and other kind of social media memes going around. There's no evidence that that's widespread, and it all runs through the Canada Revenue Agency anyway. So at the end of the day, they're going to be able to tell whether people were entitled to it or not. But when it comes to big business getting $60 million, that's the minimum size of the loan under the LEAF program, then suddenly we're told that the requirements and supervision and due diligence are too onerous. So, you know, as usual, we kind of blame the victim for the individual unemployed people, but then we give big business kind of the carte blanche. The reality is these are big loans, and the government, of course, is going to review them. They're going to have to review them, that the plan for the business to survive has a decent chance at success, discuss and negotiate the conditions. These are minimum loans of $60 million or more, and it would be ridiculous for the government just to start writing checks without any kind of review or conditions. I think the all these discussion that Ian mentioned about the environmental requirements and transparency and so on, I think mostly are for optics. The government's trying to manage the fear that they're seen as bailing out big companies, and they want to attach it to these kind of ethical things. I don't think those will be the big barriers for the companies. The bigger barrier will be a company showing that it's got a chance of repaying the loan if it can survive the pandemic.
Ian, I got about 90 seconds, but the big fear is the government doesn't want to bail out big companies, and they want to avoid companies that privatize their profits and take them for themselves and socialize their losses and get the taxpayer to bail them out.
I actually think, and I don't disagree with what Jim just said, I do think a lot of this was for optics purposes. No excessive salaries for executives and environmental plan and so forth. I think that was more for political optics than anything. But the issue about the bailout is problematic, about not doing a bailout. What are they going to do with Air Canada? They're hemorrhaging $22 million a day. 95% of their flights have grounded. Their cash flow has vanished. And so saying, look, I'll lend you $60 million bucks or $100 million bucks or maybe $1 billion, when their problem is not that they need more debt, they need cash flow or equity capital. I mean, equity capital. And so this really doesn't address the issue of big companies that are in trouble. Companies that are not in trouble, right, well, they won't qualify in the first place.
Okay, let me take a break, guys, because we'll have you back for a second break. So Ian Lee and Jim Stanford are going to stick around. We're going to keep debating it. What about the strings attached on climate disclosure issues? Is that a shot at the energy sector? We'll debate that and lots more coming up on the Evan Solomon Show. Hang in there. Lots more to come.
As your world changes, we adapt to get your answers. Now more with Evan Solomon.
Hey, welcome back. Just a quick update before we get back to the great economic debate. The Conservative race, which is going to be decided at the end of August, had disqualified a candidate named Jim Karahalios. They said he was disqualified for statements he made. And really, Aaron O'Toole said some of the statements he made made sure that he was not eligible. They booted him out. He sued, and the court has just said he's going to be allowed back in the race. And so Jim Karahalios, we thought it was a four-person race. Now Jim is back. He is on the far right side. He is a social conservative. He's a hardcore anti-carbon taxer. And that's going to be interesting that he's back in the race and he's had to sue the party. But it's interesting because as we're talking about the carbon tax, one of the strings attached to the bailout or slash the loans to big businesses, the businesses that will get $60 million plus, is they've got to have a carbon or climate disclosure report. That's right. They got to publish an annual climate disclosure report to identify the economic risks of climate change and assess risk and what they're doing about it. And these are actually kind of detailed reports. And although Canada's oil and gas industry wanted to relax restrictions on environmental assessments, in order to get money, they're going to have to actually probably up them Is this a right way to keep businesses? Or is this a way of throwing, saying, before I throw you a life jacket to businesses, you better learn how to swim? And they're like, the whole problem is I'm drowning. Ian Lee is here, and so is Jim Stanford. Ian, I'll start with you this round. Is that the right thing to attach?
Well,
is that string okay?
That when there's a fire in your house, the fire department comes out and says, by the way, we're not putting out the fire until you donate to this worthy cause that we have in another part of the city to help disadvantaged children access public parks or something. We provide public services without strings, especially in dire situation and where a company is on the edge of collapse or we believe that it could fail. We should not be loading it up with these various conditions. Yes, of course, we want to make sure that they're not cheating. I agree with Jim. So, you know, they have to meet the minimum standards. They have to be above a certain annual size of revenue. They have to have most of their people in Canada, that kind of stuff. But when you get into the, I'll call it social engineering, you know, saying, well, you know, your salary, your executives can't make too much money. What on earth does that mean?
Why is that a problem? I'll get Jim. Why shouldn't, if you're going to lend money, why couldn't you say no tax havens, no big executive bonuses? And by the way, get on the train on climate. Is that throwing a rock at a drowning person?
No, not at all. And I'm very glad to hear Ian describe giving out unsecured low-interest loans to desperate firms as a public service, just like putting your fire out. I'm not quite sure that analogy works. But at any rate, this is largely symbolic. What are they requiring the companies to do? They're saying you have to disclose your climate risks. Well, this is a standard of good corporate governance today anyway, and any corporation worth its salt is already doing that because financial investors are demanding it. It's part of describing the risks of a business before you ask people to put money into it. And all the government is doing here is saying you have to disclose it. They're not even saying you have to change your behavior. So the idea that this is somehow punishing the oil and gas industry, which is already getting support. Remember, all of the businesses in Canada can qualify for the wage subsidy, the CEWS. That includes companies that are applying for these loans, and it includes petroleum and other fossil fuel companies. And now the government is just saying, if we're going to give you this unsecured loan, and by the way, that kind of makes us a stakeholder, well, we want you to disclose your risks. It's not punitive at all, and it shouldn't slow the process down by 2 days.
All right, let's go to deficits and debt. Debt could surpass $1 trillion. Deficits will go. PBO, the Parliamentary Budget Watchdog, the independent officer of Parliament, Ian Lee, said, you know, early on, $252 billion, not 19.8 that it was a year ago. But it's still okay. It's going to be much closer to $300 billion at this point. Are you worried about it, or is it necessary and Canada's okay?
Who, me or
Ian Lee? Yeah.
I'm not worried if you mean, I don't buy this argument that Canada is on the edge of insolvency or something silly. We have a central bank, the printing press. We were, before the crisis started, we were one of the lower countries, federal debt to GDP at 30%. My worry, my fear is not today. My fear is we're going to hit $250 billion deficit this year. And can anybody name any politician in this country who says, okay, next year, by the way, we're going back to balanced budget? Of course not. We're going to have another roughly $250 billion, maybe $200 billion, maybe quarter of a trillion, and the year after. And within 3 years, we're going to blow past Kretschmann's debt to GDP of 67% in 1995 that many people believed was unsustainable. Even if it is sustainable, it's going to, I believe, cause consequences such as increased inflation. Milton Friedman won a Nobel Prize for showing that countries around the world for 2,000 years, when they get deeply, deeply, deeply indebted, they deliberately engineer inflation so they can pay back the unsustainable indebtedness with cheapened inflated dollars. So my fear down the road is we're creating, storing up a whole bunch of problems for the future.
Jim, what's your level of concern about that?
Well, I'm not concerned now, and if we manage it well, I'm not concerned in the future either. The reality is the big money in this year's deficit is going to be for programs that are inherently temporary, like the wage subsidy. That's a humongous program, $80 billion, but it's got an expiration date. And yes, the government is going to have major expenses that continue for some years because we're going to have to reconstruct this economy. We're going to have to rebuild. It's kind of like we're coming out of World War II. Now we're coming out of a war against coronavirus, and we're going to have to rebuild industries and rebuild jobs, and government's going to be a big part of that. But as long as we've got appropriate monetary policies, the Bank of Canada is buying all of the debt that the government is issuing, in essence, keeping interest rates effectively at zero, then this can absolutely be managed. It's only if we shoot ourselves in the foot somewhere down the road by getting interest rates back up high that it will become a problem, and that's a good reason not to do that. So other countries...
What about the CERB? What about the Canadian Emergency Response Benefit? $2,000 a month. Some people are worried that there's fraud in there, but others are saying maybe we should convert this, Jim, into a permanent universal basic income. Thoughts?
Right, yeah. Yeah, I think there's some interesting discussions to have there. Another feature of the CERB that should definitely be maintained is that it did apply to people who don't normally qualify for employment insurance, things like gig workers and independent contractors and so on, who in our modern precarious labor market clearly need income support, just like wage workers do. So, you know, I think that there are ways that the government measures that they've implemented during this crisis, some of them have to be maintained and made permanent,
right.
But a lot of them are temporary. And I think the crucial focus has to be on putting people back to work. If we get people back to work and producing and generating income and paying taxes, then the debt will not be an issue down the road.
What do you think about the CERB or the maybe converting some elements of it permanently, Ian?
Into a guaranteed annual income. I testified a couple of Fridays ago before the House of Commons Finance Committee with a bunch of others, including Kevin Milligan, and the question came up to him, and he's written on this, of course, and he estimated that it would be about a third of GDP. It's massively expensive. I've debated Jim's former colleagues at the Canadian Center for Policy Alternatives several times, and I said, you know, it's not a crazy idea if you roll all existing social programs into the GAI, and I'm talking unemployment insurance, I'm talking old age pensions, guaranteed income supplement, social welfare, affordable housing subsidies, and so forth. And each time I debated somebody from CCPA, they said, no. We want the GAI on top of all of the existing programs. And my answer is, and Milligan was too, but I'll give you my own answer, I think that's completely unsustainable. It's going to be just massively too expensive.
All right. Guys, that's an interesting debate. You know, sometimes you just tone it down and get some perspectives on the debate. You know, I love it.
Hey,
we agreed.
We agreed almost as much as we disagreed.
We did.
Ian Lee and Jim Stanford agreed. This is COVID. COVID's bringing everything's upside down. I don't even understand what the hell's going on anymore. Guys, pleasure to have you on the program. Take care of your loved ones. We got to take a break. Our Quebec listeners will listen to Premier Legault. Our Ontario and BC listeners will listen to Doug Ford.